This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm superstar Frank Morano. Do you know who Anne Hathaway is? Anne Hathaway is an actress. For some reason, she's one of these people that a lot of society has found annoying. I mean, I guess that's the way to put it. I don't like to say anything negative about anybody, and I don't necessarily find her annoying. You know what it is? You know what's a little off-putting about her? She seems a little too nice. You ever know people like that? They just seem a little too nice. That's, I think, what people are annoyed with Anne Hathaway, if I had to pick, but you know, whatever. I used to see her when I was covering federal trials in Brooklyn. I think she lives, or at least years ago, she lived near the courthouse, and she would walk around there. It just seemed like a nice enough person. Once in a while, people would stop her and ask her for a picture, and she would have no problem taking a picture with anyone. But she said something very interesting. She had an interview with V magazine. I don't know if it's V or 5 magazine, if it's a Roman numeral. And she opened up about her experience back in the 2000s for something called a chemistry read, where evidently you meet with a lot of potential male co-stars and kiss them to see who you have chemistry with. So she tells V Magazine, "I was told we have 10 guys coming in today and you're cast. Aren't you excited to make out with all of them?" And I thought, is there something wrong with me? Because I wasn't excited. I thought it sounded gross, she continued. And I was so young and terribly aware of how easy it was to lose everything by being labeled difficult. So I just pretended I was excited and I got on with it. Hathaway said this practice was considered normal during the early 2000s. It wasn't a power play. No one was trying to be awful or hurt me. It was just a very different time. And now we know better. So for her new film, The Idea of You, she served as a producer and she conducted her chemistry reads a bit differently. She tells the magazine, "We asked each of the actors coming in to choose a song that they felt their character would love, that they would put on to get my character to dance. And then we'd do a short little improv." And I was sitting in a chair like we had come in from dinner or a walk or something. We pressed play. And we just started dancing together. Now, I don't think it's great that, you know, even famous actresses, which I think she was even 20 years ago, have to make out with 10 guys that they don't know. And if they're not excited about it, I think if it was a guy, he would be excited about it. I really do. If you're a male actor, never having been an actor, I have no idea. But if you're a male actor and they tell you, "All right, you're going to have to make out with 10 beautiful women today. See who you have the most chemistry with." I mean, what are you going to say? "Oh, tough job, but I guess somebody's got to do it." I think you would be excited as a guy. But I understand how women might view that a bit differently. And I do feel bad that she had to do that. But I think her version of a chemistry test is way off. They're going to start dancing together. What if you're not a good dancer? You're not going to get cast in the picture? I think it's a little silly, honestly. I'm not saying that making out with the strangers is a better philosophy, but I don't know. Maybe it is. So there you have it. Anne Hathaway had to make out with 10 guys in one day. And apparently that practice is no longer tolerated. There you have it. 800-848-9222. Matt Blaze, what do you make of that? Her explanation of the so-called chemistry read.
I don't see what the big deal is, to be honest. Maybe it is the guy's point of view of saying, like, all right, so you had to make out with 10 guys to see if you had chemistry. You're kissing somebody. It's not like you have to go in bed and sleep with them. You're just kissing someone. I remember as a kid, we would have a kissing booth. Remember, there's a kissing booth?
Right, but you know,
line up and you kiss.
Right, but you wouldn't really make out at the kissing booth, right? It's like a peck on the cheek or something, isn't it?
No, it was a little bit of, maybe not a long make out session, but a little bit of a.
Well, you're talking about at a carnival or something?
Yeah, at the camp carnival.
I mean,
summer camp.
I guess we went to different camps.
Yeah.
I did a kiss on the cheek.
My camp was better.
Yeah, I would say. My goodness.
I don't see that it's that big of a deal that you had to make out with different people.
Well, in fairness, she's not threatening a lawsuit or complaining or saying, I can't believe this or I was victimized. She's saying that she had to go through this. She didn't like it. And now that she's a producer, she does things a bit differently. I just think the way that she does it is kind of dumb, honestly. I don't think it's effective.
Yeah, singing a song.
Right. And then dancing?
Yeah. Like, what is that going to do? How are you going to know that you have chemistry? Maybe you'll know that two people can dance with each other. That doesn't mean they'll have chemistry.
We'll see if this movie's any good. That's how we'll know if her method is good. Then everybody will try. Tony, what about you? Where are you on this Anne Hathaway chemistry read?
I don't think I have to kiss another female to see if there's chemistry. How about just us talking, just vibing with one another to see if we have good chemistry?
I hear you. And again, I don't know anything about making movies or casting films or anything like that. But I feel like it's a different type of chemistry if you're casting a romantic lead. If you're going to be depicting, say, kissing on screen, I don't know. It should look like there's a little bit of passion between the two of you.
Which is true. But there's several movies that I've seen in the past that it was good chemistry and the actor and the actress hated each other.
That's true. Yeah, any examples come to mind?
Deborah Winger and Richard Gere in Officer and the Gentleman.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, she hated him.
I didn't know that. Wow. I had no idea. See, this is why you listen to this show. There you have it.
Did you imagine if you walk in, like you're auditioning with Anne Hathaway, who I guess was somewhat of a star at the time.
Right, I think
so. She's a good-looking woman, good-looking girl, and you walk in and Anne Hathaway goes, ugh.
Well, she's not going to do that. She's a professional, and she's eager.
I hope she is. But
come on, she's not
young
gonna do
back
that.
Then.
No, come on, she's not going to do that. No, I'd be curious if there is a difference in the genders on this. I'd love to hear from women. If you were an actress and they said to you, "All right, we're going to do a chemistry read. You're cast, and we're going to try you out with 10 different potential guys. You're going to have to make out with them, see who you have chemistry with." Would you welcome that opportunity at least Matt Blaze and I would be okay with, and I'm assuming Tony, you're with us on this. And then, or would you feel as Anne Hathaway felt that it's kind of gross? What do you think? 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Hey, you remember Play-Doh? No, not the child's play thing that could make copies of the comic strip. No, Plato. The ancient Greek philosopher. Well, we may now know the whereabouts of his grave. A burnt papyrus scroll found in Herculaneum, a city buried by the eruption of Mount Vesuvius in 79 AD, is believed to have revealed the whereabouts of Plato's grave. How cool is this? You know, I read an article yesterday about how a bunch of people are complaining about generative AI and how some people think it's a solution in search of a problem. Some people think AI works great. Some people think it works terribly. But everyone that was quoted in this one particular article, they were saying, yeah, but did we really need it? The comparison that they made to it was actually bearskin hats. But this is one use of AI, which I think is 5-star. So artificial intelligence techniques led to a breakthrough allowing some of the thousands of scrolls found in a Roman aristocrat's library to be read. And one said that Plato was buried next to the Shrine of the Muses in the garden of his academy in Athens. It had been known only that he was buried somewhere in the large grounds. The text also said that Plato, one of the greatest Greek philosophers and a student of Socrates and a teacher of Aristotle, was enslaved, likely by the Spartans, around 400 BC. Isn't that interesting? That Plato was a slave? Amazing. I was talking to a fella earlier this morning who's from Sparta, New Jersey. I didn't even know they had slaves in Sparta. All right, 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222, Joe in Queens. Hi.
Well, yeah, hi, Frank. You know, Becoming Jane was a great movie with Anne Hathaway. She played the part of Jane Austen, the writer, and she had the choice between two decent men, neither of whom she picked. One was because of guy was rich, but he wasn't too charismatic. And the other, you know, he looked good, and the other guy just wasn't making enough money at the time. And then the daughter of the second guy that she almost eloped with comes back and was a fan of hers, as he had wanted to see her, you know, when she did like a talk about her book. So it was a sad movie. She really did a great job with that. But as far as the chemistry test, I think something like a long hug, holding hands, I think kissing 10 different guys is not appropriate then or now.
I hear you. And it doesn't sound like they do this anymore now, Joe. Yeah. Joe, thank you for the call. And I'll put that Anne Hathaway film on my list. 800-848-9222. Diane in Brooklyn, what do you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, as a former bio major in college, I mean, the mouth is one of the filthiest places in the body. And so, you know, you're like making out with somebody that's like, you know, so you're swapping saliva and everything else. And you can get all kinds of illnesses from that. You know, you really can. And so I think from a health I think it's ridiculous. But also, you know, there are many married couples that have wonderful chemistry together, but you don't really perceive it on the screen. So this is all about acting. And so, I don't think that you can really this chemistry test will really prove anything. You know, it's about how you're acting and how somebody perceives it. It's not necessarily real chemistry.
Right, no, it's on-screen chemistry, which is what I think they would probably test in something like a screen test. Diane, thank you. By the way, when she uses the term making out, I'm not sure how into the making out process they would get. I don't know if they would just, I can't imagine they would be tongue. I'd be very surprised. But who knows? I don't know how Hollywood operates. 800-848-9222. Brandon in New Jersey. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, Frank. Yeah, I think Hollywood kissing, they leave out the tongue. But, you know, I think if you're a good actor or actress, it really, you know, you can pull it off no matter what, kind of like to Tony's point. You know, there's, couples in movies that hate each other. Like, for example, Jennifer Grey and Patrick Swayze, you know, they hated each other.
Is that true? I didn't know that either.
Because they were in Red Dawn before Dirty Dancing. But to the Anne Hathaway's point, there was chemistry, and that came through because of the dancing. They did acquire some chemistry on an offset due to that dancing. So she might have a little bit of a point.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that either. But, well, yeah, okay. No, I'm not saying she doesn't have a point, by the way. I just think it's interesting the reaction she had, that she thought it was gross, but still felt kind of pressured to pretend that she thought it was going to be fun. And I'm just wondering if there's a bit of a gender disparity in this. And so far, it sounds like there is. I think the guys would necessarily mind, and the women would mind. Let me know what you think. 800-848-9222. By the way, coming up in a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Noam Layden. And then a little later this hour, we got Brian Kilmeade waiting in the wings. Jim in Manhattan, what do you think?
Hey, good morning, Frank. I remember years back, I was listening to Stern, and he was interviewing a girl that was trying out for a little part with Robert De Niro in some movie. And she was saying that he was auditioning girls that had to crawl in bed with him to see if there was chemistry. They had to, like, I don't know if they were, had their clothes on or whatever, but she was like, she thought it was the most bizarre thing. They had to roll around in bed together under the sheets for her to get this little bit acting part. And it was like, even Stern thought it was, like, bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, the way you describe it, and I didn't hear that specific interview, but the way that you're describing it, it does sound a little odd. What do you think is a better way? So far, we have one gentleman suggesting a long hug. We have Tony suggesting some polite conversation. We have Anne Hathaway suggesting a song and dance. What do you think is a good way to measure the chemistry that two actors may have who are going to be playing romantic leads?
Well, I mean, if you could actually have a normal conversation without a script and maybe have a few laughs or something, I would find that more interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that would do a good job. I mean, if you're trying to get how people would seem as an on-screen couple, I'm not sure that kind of a conversation would necessarily tell you.
I mean, but they're actors. If you can't, you know, act, and you know, what's the sense of being an actor,
right? But but I just think certain people, there's an on-screen spark that, and certain people there aren't, even if they're both good actors.
But I mean if you can sell, you know, Oscar Mayer wieners in a commercial, I'm sure you can act with somebody on screen and pull it off if you're a good actor. I'm sure there's been thousands of actors and actresses that, you know, despised each other but pulled it off.
Yeah, well, and yeah, we got a couple
of... It seems a little odd.
Yeah, all right. Well, thank you, Jim. 800-848-9222 if you want to weigh in. Noam Layden is here. We'll chat with him straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore. I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far.
26 minutes after the hour, I want to thank the official program observer, well, really unofficial, program observer, David in the Bronx. He pointed out that I confused Play-Doh with Silly Putty. That's right. I did confuse the two, Play-Doh with Silly Putty. It has been a while since I played with either Play-Doh or Silly Putty, but I regret the error. I would have made a Play-Doh-related reference instead of a Silly Putty-related reference, and I retract that. And I always try to be accurate on this program. My apologies. All right. All right. Someone that his middle name is Accuracy, either that or Ishka Bibble, has walked into the studio.
Stand by for the Other Side of Midnight's news.
City, the Other
Side of Midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hey there, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. I heard you earlier this morning talking with the crew of people you had in here about Teslas and self-driving cars. Right. And I have an update on a story that I had done for you. Well, I can't remember. Maybe it was about a month back about flying cars. And you kind of poo-pooed it. It seemed to me that you were like,
I did not poo-poo it.
But you kind of did. You said, yeah, this is not going to happen.
No, I didn't.
So we're now finding out. And I was watching this video overnight in Slovakia. There's a professor, Stefan Klein, who's been working on this flying car. He calls it the air car. I think there's probably a better name for it than that. But it is his vision of a flying car. And they've done 200 tests of this car that has wings that can then take off. It doesn't mean much of a runway, about 300 meters to take off into the sky. It can go about 120 miles per hour. And they've done 200 successful flights unmanned. Now they have tried this just in the last 48 to 72 hours. They had a passenger in this flying car. Now, this has never been done before. I've never seen this before. There's video of this. I will send it to you so you can add it to your Facebook page.
Outstanding.
But it was a successful flight. After 200 successful takeoff and landing, the professor, Stefan Klein, picked somebody who offered to be the first to go in this flying car. It has wings. Obviously, it's two-seat dual-mode prototype. It has these foldable wings, a propeller on the back. It needs 300 meters of runway to get off the ground into the sky. Footage that we were watching shows this vehicle flying at about 120 miles per hour at about 8,000 feet high in the air.
Okay. And 120 miles per hour, that's no joke. You and can get there in a hurry.
And 300 meters of runway is not a whole lot.
No.
So it doesn't need a lot to take off. And they were able to take off and successfully land. Everybody was okay. Nobody was hurt on the ground. Nobody was hurt in the air. I think this is great. I know your crew was not happy. They don't like the idea of self-driving cars or flying cars. But I think, hey, that's the next place to be is in the sky.
I am open to this. Realistically, when do they think this might be brought to market?
They think it's probably at least a decade away.
Oh, it is that far away.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's exciting. How is this vehicle powered?
It is electric,
oh,
actually.
Electric.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
So,
well, that could help it. A lot of tax credits for those electric
vehicles.
You
do get a lot of tax credits. Of course, the issue will be, and in a place like Slovakia, I'll get that spit out, is that it may be easier to get the government officials on board with selling these cars because now you, of course, have to give up airspace and try to figure out where the planes go, where the helicopters go, and then where the flying cars go. So it may be a long time before we see that here in the United States. But good for them in Slovakia for trying to figure this out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't keep those Slovaks down.
The cicadas are out.
I don't mind them, but it's going to be a whole lot of them this time.
Yeah, there's two broods coming out at the same time. There's one that comes out like every 13 to 17 years. Another one that's somewhere in that range. But it's been 251 years since both broods have come out at the exact same time.
Oh, boy.
And the place that's going to be seeing them the most is mostly down south. We'll see them up here, but not to the same extent they will down south. In places like South Carolina, they've already started to emerge, and there's a couple towns in South Carolina where the local police departments are getting 911 calls because
the noise is
so loud that people can't figure out what it is. They say it sounds almost like a truck engine going at full blast, so loud that they're having a hard time falling asleep at night, turning on the sound machine to drown it out. And the police department say they've actually seen so many phone calls that they've now put out on their Facebook and other social media sites telling people this is going to be around for the entire summer. It's insects. It's nothing more, nothing else to be worried about. There's nothing to be scared of when it comes to these cicadas. They don't really attack you. I mean, if they get in your face, you sort of just brush them out of the way. The biggest issue is once they die, There's dogs obviously like to eat anything on the ground. The thought is that dogs will eat these cicadas, but there's nothing to suggest there's anything wrong with
that. Right? I know. Yeah. Some restaurants even serve them.
Last time we had this, restaurants were coming up with recipes because there they were on the ground. They were collecting them and they were, you know, putting a lot of butter and or olive oil into a pan and frying them up, and people were eating them.
Well, that's not for me. But the how much of the country is expected to be covered with this trillion cicadas?
Almost all the country will see something along this route of these cicadas. It's just a matter of how much or how much noise they'll make. It's the Southeast that's going to feel it the most. That's the thought here, is they'll start coming, and they already have started coming out of the ground in some places. Here, we will see them here, by the way, in the Northeast as well, but not to the same extent that they're going to get in, down in places like South Carolina, North Carolina, and further down.
You know, it's so interesting. I was reading that the so-called experts have no idea why they come out every 14 years or however many years it is, or how they know it's time to come out. It's not really clear. It's really interesting.
Well, it's all about mating season, and that the, you know, after 17 years, you can imagine.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I bet. All right. Party. Thank you, Noam Liddin.
And now you know the rest of the story.
All right. There is quite a bit of news going on all over the world, all over the country. And we're going to break it down in just a minute with Brian Kilmeade. If you want to see some of the articles based on some of the subjects that we've been throwing your way all day, please follow our Facebook page. You just have to go to facebook.com/MoranoFan, and if you just hit follow, you'll see a lot of the articles that we end up talking about on the air, and some of the videos that we end up doing and kind of having fun with on there. And if you ever miss any portion of the show, we post a link to the podcast up there as well. So that's all at facebook.com/MoranoFan. And once you follow the page, you should get an invite to, you know, to join our Facebook group as well. All right. I want to welcome to the program Brian Kilmeade, a New York Times bestselling author, nationally syndicated radio talk show host. If you listen to the experts, the third most important in the entire country, and certainly the co-anchor of Fox and Friends. Hello, Brian.
What's happening, Frank? I'm just a little tired. I've been protesting for Hamas overnight, and then I quickly had to run to work when I realized we were on together. Such a great cause.
You know, it's funny.
Hamas stands for so many great things.
You know, it's funny that you said that, because 2 hours ago, I was talking with your former radio partner, Andrew Napolitano, and he said, and I don't think he was joking, he said that if he was on the faculty at Columbia, he'd be out there protesting with him.
Why?
Well, because he thinks, you know, I mean, I can't recapitulate Judge Napolitano's First Amendment arguments the way he can. You remember how tough it was to, you know, to get in a word with when you were doing a show with him. But it is interesting.
But I mean, you're really pro Hamas. You want to divest. You go to Columbia, and then all of a sudden you go, you know what? I'd like them to divest from Israel. So I'm just going to make a pup tent, put a pup tent up in the middle of class, and I'm going to scream anti-Semitic phrases. Is that something to back?
Well, I know you're interviewing Speaker Mike Johnson today, who was actually there yesterday. He made some comparisons, and he's going to be on with Sid Rosenberg as well. But he made some comparisons to what was going on in Germany in the 1930s and at other points in American history and in European history, when he's in terms of seeing what he observed yesterday. Do you think it's gotten that bad?
You know, I can only tell you by what I read, obviously. I couldn't imagine. I can just tell you what people's accounts are. We had a Holocaust survivor who was 9 years old in the concentration camps in studio. And she says it. It reminds her of the run-up. And she can't believe the flashback she's getting. Never in her life, literally her whole life, did she feel as she had to hide the fact that she was Jewish. So here she is in her 90s, sitting on our studio, saying that, I can't believe I'm saying this, I am concerned for me and my family. So the people that have the tattoo, she has a tattoo on her arm for a concentration camp. So I think that's my evidence. And for anybody to say, hey, I'm going to protest with my with those great kids, those genius kids who got a near perfect SAT score, unless their family went there and they have a legacy, who are sitting at Harvard and Yale and MIT and the University of Texas, Austin, obviously USC last night, UCLA. And they're not as prestigious as the others. But you see these people with their faces covered up and who they just went to the Yasser Arafat gift shop and picked up some Palestinian garb. And they don't even know what they're talking about. So now you have the grand, when the grand Ayatollah, Frank, is praising you, you know you're on the wrong side. And that's exactly what they're doing. This Supreme Ayatollah, who's hated and despised by his people, who rapes and kills people, who jails and beats and women who have their hijab on wrong, they're the ones, he's now praising American college students. So this is a scary time in America, but just let's remember who's right and who's wrong. Hamas is nothing to be supported. The Palestinian cause right now votes Hamas into power, and people aren't concerned about the video that popped up last night of the one-armed hostage who's about 40 pounds down, who lost his arm in live fire on October 7th and has his first proof of life last night, and his parents were obviously elated and concerned. Does he sit, sits there with a half an arm? And you have the Prime Minister Netanyahu just coming out and saying, listen, we're not debating Rafah. We're not debating humanitarian aid. We're not debating 300 missiles coming into Israel. We're talking about people that just hate people because they're Jewish in America. I mean, and people think that's debatable. And I'm watching other channels and they're mad at cops for coming in who were called in by the colleges, except for idiotic presidents like the one in Columbia, only called them in once. They're mad at the cops for coming in and looking threatening. I mean, what is going on? It's upside down world.
The it's going to be really a fascinating thing because the Columbia president seems to be alienating everybody. The folks on the side of the protesters think she's been too likely to call in the police, too willing to try to curtail their protests. And obviously, Mike Johnson's corner of the world thinks that that is the exact opposite. So I think she's going to have a very tough time surviving this because I think a lot of donors are going to do what Robert Kraft has been doing and pulling their money. And you saw what happened with MIT when once that starts happening. Brian, a couple other issues I want to pick your brain on. TikTok, we've been talking a lot about this quite a bit. They're on the clock, and they have been put on the warning, you know, whatever you want to call it, by President Biden and Congress. Now they're vowing to file a legal challenge against this law that's requiring their parent company, ByteDance, to sell the platform or withdraw from the U.S. Where do you see this going, both politically and legally, Brian?
Okay. Number one, the big difference now and when Donald Trump put it forward, they quickly went to the courts and started suing the administration at the time who tried to ban TikTok initially. But this is legislation. So it's going to hold up in court. But the question is, if you really want to ban TikTok, why not do it within 6 months? Instead, they lengthened the time through this election. So that was an acquiescence. The Senate asked the House to put in the bill. Say, oh, if you're going to put in the bill, fine, but give us more time to help them divest. They're going to use that time not to divest. They're going to use it to fight. My hope is that people understand that the FBI director, that leading Democrats and leading Republicans, anybody who's not been paid off by people like Jeff Yass, who has made $30 million minimum, is the largest American stakeholder in TikTok, and who pays off by the just people like Rand Paul, and is a huge donor to both campaigns. You know, understand what's good for the country. And not what's good for your mind. I feel bad about people who have a business on it, but you cannot allow a Chinese company to be the number one media company in our country. There is nothing about the Uyghurs on there, nothing positive about Taiwan. And believe me, by a score of 50-1, even after October 7th, all pro-Palestinians to everyone pro-Israeli. A message on there in any way, shape, or form. They know what divides America. The Chinese, any tech firm, has to turn over any intelligence. intelligence to the Chinese government. A member of the Chinese Communist Party is on the board of TikTok. So people say, well, it's stored here. It's stored there, but accessed everywhere. So anybody, I just think that if you don't go for the ban of TikTok, you're either being paid off, you don't want to understand how dangerous it is, or you're just being selfish.
One of the people, you referenced President Trump's attempt to ban it when he was president. He's changed his mind on this. He said that he doesn't think it should be banned because it would only help Facebook and other social media platforms that he doesn't like. This is the most popular news website or news sharing platform among young people. What does this do in the election where you have one candidate, Biden, who signed a ban on TikTok, and another candidate, Trump, who's saying TikTok shouldn't be banned? Do you see voters actually, particularly young voters, voting on the TikTok issue?
Well, they're both worried about their election fortunes. So Joe Biden knows it's bad. He's been briefed by his FBI director, every Homeland Security expert, and said this is bad. They're accessing our material. They're going to store it. They have it. They understand what floats America's boat, what divides us. We'll check out this news feed. But he wants access to the 170 million people. Mm. So he's going to continue to post and make ridiculous personal ads, and other people will go act. This way, he doesn't have to sit down and do interviews with any White House correspondents or any big-time network. Work anchors. He feels like he's reaching people on TikTok, but he knows it's wrong. Think about that. What kind of lesson is that to your kids? Hey, guys, if you could benefit from it, even if you know it's wrong, go ahead and do it while signing your name on a ban, by the way. Divest or leave. Now, the former president of the United States has got legitimate reason to be banned at Facebook. The Zuckerbucks and everything that went into it, mm-hmm. what's been exposed on the Twitter files. So they're saying, he's saying, well, in the short term, American companies did everything possible to suppress things like the laptop and push down any positive Trump news, and he had to fight all those social media barons. But the thing that is missing is that he's, for the most part, wants Joe Biden blamed for this, because he went out there on the record to get rid of it, and courts pushed back, and Democrats did nothing. So now he's saying, okay, you're going to make this harsh move? Go ahead and do it, but don't put my fingerprints on it. But he knows when he gets in, this thing is gone.
One of the folks, I mean, you mentioned Jeff Yass and his supportive folks like Rand Paul. Some people are saying that Jeff Yass's support of Republican causes, including Trump-related causes, is part of the reason that Trump might have changed his tune on that. You see anything there?
Could be. You know, could be. And I just think that Trump has got a real anger issue with Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos and all these tech firms, and he feels as though when it's briefed on him that they're going to benefit, his instincts are like, why should I help these guys mm-hmm. out? And then also, just keep this in mind, guys, everyone listening who loves TikTok, they just banned Threads, which is related to Meta. That's their failed version of Twitter. And they banned the WhatsApp. They've already banned Facebook. So China has nothing of ours there. Russia has nothing of ours there. But we're supposed to be open and honest with a group that's vowed a country that wants to destroy us and combining to do it. And we're supposed to give them access to our next generation of leaders or next generation of workers or just Americans. Why does that make sense? You can't buy CBS. They wouldn't be able to buy WABC. You know, it's bad enough you got Soros buying up everything, but he's an American citizen. But now we're going to let other countries have business people buy it up. Iran's got a great tech center. What if they come up with an app that's even better than TikTok? Mm-hmm. Should we give them access?
Let me ask you about the big story out of Arizona. A state grand jury in Arizona has indicted Trump aides, including Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and Boris Epstein, as well as the so-called fake electors. And they've named President Trump as an unindicted co-conspirator. Give me your thoughts on where this Arizona case goes.
Just a bunch of Democratic idiots looking to affect the election. They know it's going to be decided by a percentage point, and they think that if they can convince anybody that this administration is an outlaw, lawless regime, now that there's a Democrat in charge as a governor and attorney general, they're going to do it. I was watching CNN say that this is just a Frankenstein, to their people, this is a Frankenstein construction of a case, and this is designed to further change the dialogue from I'm going to turn around the economy, I'm going to fortify our defense, I'm going to keep our tax rate in place, and I'm going to reform our education system. So instead of hearing what Donald Trump stands for, now you're going to hear about Rudy Giuliani and Boris Epstein. And this is just a joke. Now, all of a sudden, 4 years later, you just realize now that the nominee's been picked, we have to bring justice to some fake elector scam that now has to be dealt with. I mean, people, I hope people are smarter. Independents that listen to you and Democrats that see this anti-Semitic behavior being allowed to go out there in America, because our president of the United States is afraid to alienate, I guess, his angry terrorist base. So he won't even come out and say anything. And then we have them suing his opponent and trying to keep him in court. I hope people understand who's in the Oval Office and what they stand for.
George Will in the Washington Post basically said yesterday that the Senate ratification of Ukrainian aid proves that Dwight Eisenhower's baton of Republican internationalism was passed via Ronald Reagan to Mitch McConnell. And he called those three, McConnell, Eisenhower, and Reagan, the three most important Republicans of the past 100 years. Mitch McConnell yesterday did a little bit of a victory lap on the issue of foreign aid for countries like Ukraine. This is what he said.
I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin. And so he had an enormous audience, which convinced a lot of rank-and-file Republicans that maybe this was a mistake. I think the former president had sort of mixed views on it. We all felt the border was a complete disaster, myself included. And Chad, you remember covering the phases we went through. First, there was an effort to make law, which requires you to deal with Democrats. And then a number of our members thought it wasn't good enough. And then our nominee for president didn't seem to want us to do anything at all. That took months.
And now, Brian, I know that you agree with McConnell on the aid there, but don't you think that's an oversimplification of where a good portion of the Republican base is at this point? I mean, to say that basically Tucker Carlson was saying this and Donald Trump has mixed views and that's what soured Republicans on Ukrainian aid, isn't that at best kind of sore winning and at worst pretty naive?
I know what Mitch McConnell wants. Number one, I'll never say anything bad about Tucker. I'm a friend of his. I don't care if I agree with everything or nothing. It doesn't matter. So I'll never say anything bad about Tucker. He's been great to me, and I imagine that'll always be the case. Number two is Mitch McConnell, I know where he stands. I get it. And I believe Ronald Reagan would have not even allowed a six-month delay to happen. I believe that Kevin McCarthy would have got that aid even quicker. But Mitch McConnell deserves zero credit. Zero credit. Because Chuck Schumer passed something, Mitch McConnell didn't say much, didn't alter much. It goes to the House and it goes on a delay a game for 3 months. I didn't see Mitch McConnell doing anything creative. I know where he stood the whole time. I got it. But you weren't in there with your sleeves rolled up trying to work it out in the House behind there. You didn't sit there, you know, with the, you know, orchestrating any type of save. You're benefiting from it because most Republicans, obviously by the vote, were in favor of getting aid to a democracy against an expansionist evil empire in Russia. So that's the way America does it. Guys, I hate to tell you, we're leaders of the free world. I think America, we have taken that for granted. We go, why do we have to do that? We're the leaders. We're the biggest. We're the best natural resources, the most wonderful history, the most driven, the most innovative, the most resourceful. And we've been counted on for the last 80 years. Let's not be the generation that says, I'm tired of doing that. Okay? We're not expansionist. We don't want anything from Ukraine except for possibly our money back for the aid we've given you. Eventually, some of that stuff is loans. We've already been explained that most of this material that's going over there being replaced by more modern material. Also, we're going to school on everything in there. And then most of these companies are American companies that are getting paid by America and our allies to make this stuff. So in the end, we might even make a profit off it. And by doing the right thing, by giving Israel aid, we're doing the right thing. By stopping them from going into Rafah, we're doing the wrong thing. By sitting back and allowing these protesters to idiotically and naively support a terrorist group in over 100 college campuses without speaking out on it, that's clearly the wrong thing. To me, there's hard issues in this world. Nothing I described is hard if you go through American history.
Lastly, Brian, and on a somewhat lighter note, I asked the judge about your time doing radio together, and he had an interesting anecdote about a Christmas party that the two of you had.
Oh. So we had a Christmas party one day for the whole team, a very expensive Christmas party at the Del Frisco's, one of the most expensive steakhouses in the city across the street from Fox. I turn around, and I see five people there, and I don't know who the hell they are. I said, Brian, who are these people? I just met them in the street, and I invited them in, and I thought I'd put it on your tab. Now, they were military guys that were in the city for the weekend out of uniform, and I think they were being truthful. I don't know. But they ended up getting a very expensive steak meal off of me, not off of Kilby. Now, having said that, I love Brian, and I miss him terribly.
A true story or not, Brian?
Yeah, they were Navy SEALs. And I knew two of them. The other three I didn't. I said, guys, just come join me. And they were just out. And I think two of them had never even been to New York before. And they came in. They all knew the judge. And we went to Del Frisco's. And it was great. You know, we just wanted to thank the people and all the management. And then I think the judge was like, wait a second. We're doing this at night at Del Frisco's? We're getting a table? You know, there's no limitation on what people can order. So everybody, it was fun, though. The judge does a great job. I mean, he is an unbelievable communicator. Every question you ask him, and we're all non-law students, he never says, that makes no sense. He always says, okay, let me see how I could take that and make you not look bad. So the judge is as great as he is as a legal mind, he's an unbelievable communicator. He's just that's why he's probably a great professor.
No doubt about it. Brian, going to have to end it there. It's always a treat to have you. People can hear Speaker Mike Johnson on with Brian Kilmeade a little bit later. And obviously, there's no shortage of things that Brian is doing in consuming media. You're going to want to check him out Saturday night on One Nation. Thanks, Brian. Enjoy the NFL draft tonight.
Go get him. And Saturday night, I'll be October 27th in Henderson, Nevada, right outside Las Vegas.
April 27th.
So there's a few tickets left. Yeah, so hopefully people on KDON will join us.
Absolutely. People can get tickets at briankilmeade.com. All the information's available. 15 seconds of fame straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I am Frank Morano. Why don't we give you an opportunity to be heard for 15 seconds at 800-848-9222.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Bob!
Tonight at 5 o'clock, Westchester Manor, Hastings and Hudson, New York, is the DeskovicFoundation.org Wrongful Conviction Gala, run by Jeffrey Deskovic, exoneree attorney, DeskovicFoundation.org.
E. Frank.
Yeah, what's wrong, superstar Frank Morano? I've shaken hands with Howard Safer, Curtis Sliwa, Kurt Flirt, Michael Bloomberg, and I even shook hands with Joe Biden when he was a U.S. Senator. What's wrong with approaching Eric Adams? He used to take the phone away from my hands at one time.
Jim.
You're a superstar.
Peter.
Yes, I hope that Simple Sydney holds Johnson's feet to the fire and ask him what the hell did he get and why did he take so long to get nothing. Thank you.
Russell.
Hey, I appreciate your interview with Andrew Napolitano. You opened my eyes to the fact that he's an anti-Semite because he says that it's okay to protest. Well, protesting is one thing, but saying death to Israel and death to Jews is not protesting.
Roger.
I guess the X in Latinx
is referring to how maybe sometimes they're referred to as aliens.
Maria.
Good morning, everybody. Now that I'm 62, I'm collecting Social Security 100%. And in 20 years, I heard this and I read this, everybody's going to only get 80% of the Social Security. Well, we'll see what happens in the future.
Mike.
Morning, Frank. I heard the rant that Eric countered from his fellow passenger on his flight back from Florida. Outrageous. When asked, he should have said he was Dave Chappelle. Might have diffused things. Perhaps what he needs is his own private jet so he can fly the skies unencumbered.
Frank Morano, good day.